And welcome back. Anyone who lives to the age of 108 can cite genetics and luck as a reason why. In the case of Alice Hertzsommer, luck did more than its share, as she is a survivor of Hitler's Holocaust. In fact, she is its oldest living survivor. She is also a musician, and that played a part too, perhaps the most important part. Alice is a renowned concert pianist who was called upon to play at the Theresienstadt concentration camp that helped her survive. Alice's story is told in a new book by Caroline Stessinger, herself an accomplished concert pianist. The book is titled A Century of Wisdom, Lessons from the Life of Alice Hertzsommer, the world's oldest living Holocaust survivor. I spoke with the author in town for the Jewish Book Festival and asked what led her to Alice.
I had been curious about the use of music in the Holocaust for many, many years, most of my adult life. And I'd interviewed many of her friends all over the world. Alice was not a woman who promoted herself or tried to get well-known because of her experience in the Holocaust. And she was not one of the people that had really been written about very much. But through her friends, everyone said, you must meet Alice. You must talk to her. She can answer more of your questions. And that's how I came to her.
You know, she's going to be 109 in later this month. I think it's November 26th. And yet I understand she still practices every day, still plays.
She does. Yeah. At least 3 hours, maybe more. I have sat outside her little apartment sometimes because you can hear in the lobby through the wall, you can hear her playing. And I've been waiting. I didn't want to interrupt her. I've sat there for hours. She just keeps going.
How good is she?
Now or then?
Well, both.
From what I've heard, little bits of her playing here and there, I think she was probably an extraordinary pianist. Unfortunately, there are no recordings of her before the war. And she made recordings in Israel in the 50s, but the originals have been lost. In fact, all the 78s have been lost. But when you hear her play today, every so often, you hear a phrase that you know only could come from a really wonderful artist. She has two very seriously arthritic fingers, her index fingers, and she does not play so well today, except there is definitely something there.
And that would certainly mean more to you than it might to other people because you, too, are a pianist, right?
Right. Well, I think I would be much more sympathetic with a missed note or something that she couldn't manage today. And also in hearing out of, let's say, she's playing a long suite of Bach, you will hear phrases that are just glorious. And others are more mechanically, she just gets through.
How has she influenced you? And I should point out, we're going to go back to her story, but I just want to start it this way. What has she meant to you in terms of who she is, what she is, as an inspiration to you as a person and as a musician?
I'm glad you asked that question. Alice literally changed my life. I'm relatively optimistic, but not compared to her. And I really took what she said seriously. Many of her words border on the cliché, except coming from Alice with her moral authority from what she's lived through, it has an entirely different meaning. For example, when after 9/11, she said, you know, I don't know why you're so shocked. Don't complain. Complaining doesn't help. She said, times have always been bad. It's how you react to it. And as time went on and I got to know her much better, I was thankful that she was in my life because I faced the greatest challenge of my life. My only child was hit with a catastrophic illness. And Alice was really helpful. No time for tears. Don't sit there weeping. Do something. Act normal. Go on. Do your best.
Do you think this was a quality she perhaps always had, or was it something that was born of her experiences during the Hitler period?
I think she herself says she was born optimistic. I think she always tried to please people. She claims that her twin sister was always the pretty one, and she felt she was the clever one. But it seems even in the family structure that she tried very hard to please. So I think the quality was there. I think somehow the optimism, certainly the love of music. But obviously, this was reinforced by the experiences. She developed phenomenal survival skills.
How do you think she could have? I understand the optimism and the things that you've said, but how do you think someone could come through the experiences that she had, and not be awfully terribly bitter?
When I first went to visit her, I really thought I wanted to talk about music with her. And then I realized, no, I had to learn something, the answer to your question. And I asked her. Alice didn't talk about herself. She spoke about Rabbi Leo Beck. And she told a story. I don't know if we have time for it.
We do.
We do. On Liberation Day, May 8, 1945, the Soviet army, of course, liberated that part of Czechoslovakia. And the soldiers, the Soviet soldiers, disarmed the Nazi guards. And what did they do with them? They didn't throw them in prison. They threw them to the waiting crowd who had come out of their barracks to see what was going on. Rabbi Beck heard the commotion and came out. And he literally saved those young Nazis' lives because he told the crowd, "You don't touch one hair on their head. Justice will be done, but in a court of law. Our commandment is to live. Thou shalt not kill." And he had such a powerful influence that the crowd dispersed, and the Nazi guards probably went back to their homes, wherever they were. Alice said that moment of stunning humanity where he kept the crowd from murdering them with their bare hands was a turning point, a great turning point in her life.
That is not the end of the story. It's the end of that particular period of her life. But
right.
For folks to understand how she got there, let's tell the story in kind of a capsulized version, if you will. She grew up just outside of Prague, as I understand it. Parents, fairly well-to-do. She was exposed to all the right things that a proper young lady would be exposed to. And as she was growing up, the Nazis invaded Czechoslovakia to take over the Sudetenland. Pick it up from there.
The Nazis took over the Sudetenland. Then we had Kristallnacht, which the observance is coming up on Friday. And then they marched into Prague on March 16th, 1939. And step by step, the rules against the Jews were enforced until she could no longer even teach piano, not even to Jewish students. And then they were sent to the concentration camp, which was an entryway. It was a waiting room for Auschwitz, and her husband ended up in Auschwitz. Alice played 100 concerts in the camp. And here, something very important she learned and realized, that part of survival, no matter what is happening to you, is the quality of patience and imagination. And what is so extraordinary is that artists who were waiting to go to Auschwitz, or they never knew, tomorrow maybe we're on a train, the next day maybe we're dead. But even so, playing these concerts for fellow prisoners while they were waiting, they gave it their all, their best. Patience that they could do it, imagination that maybe they would survive. And it helped the prisoner audience also, because for a moment when they were listening to the concert, they were back home. They could remember the beauty of their life.
Theresienstadt was a little bit different than most of the other camps, was it not? For one of the reasons being that it was kind of a showcase.
Well, it became that because they understood they could use this as a propaganda tool. It was different in that it was not an official killing field. People died. Many people died of cold, of starvation, of disease, typhus, all kinds of horrible diseases. But it still was not Auschwitz. And, of course, it was much smaller. And that made it different. But still, people died. And once you went through those gates, there was no escape. You no longer were a human being. You had no citizenship. You had no rights. And although it was not as terrible as Auschwitz, it was certainly bad enough. It was terrible. It was horrific. And she did lose her mother and her husband further east.
I should point out, and again, I'm skipping around a little bit here, but her son, Raphael, was also a musician and also survived until the early part of this century.
Well, that's right. He was 6 years old when they went into the camp. And there was a rule. Theresienstadt had very different rules, actually, from other camps. A child, I believe, under 12 could stay with the mother. So he slept in the bunk with her. But the men and the women were separated, so her husband had to stay in another place. She refused to talk about the Holocaust after leaving the camp because she didn't want her son to grow up bitter. She wanted him to forget those times. He sang in the children's opera Brundibar, and I know survivors have told me when they met him, you know, many years later as a grown man and as a wonderful professional cellist, he said, "Tell me, how was I in Brundibar? I remember nothing of Theresienstadt." So she really did her job well. He did not remember. She was able to protect him with her love. Unfortunately, another tragedy that happened far beyond Theresienstadt was her son died when she was 98 years old.
Wow. You know, you mentioned Brundibar, and this is a story in and of itself because this was performed at Theresienstadt, as you've indicated, but under the noses of the Nazi guards, it was really a form of propaganda in and of itself, was it not? It certainly was an attack, if you will, on the Nazi regime.
Well, it was for propaganda ultimately because they saw, oh, we have a little opera here. It was performed 55 times under the eyes of the Nazis. But remember, they didn't have a huge number of guards. They liked things nice and orderly and peaceful until they could get people on a train of 2,000 to send them off to be killed. What are they going to do with children? Scruffy little Jewish children running around? They didn't want that. So the fact that they could perform and rehearse kept them out of their hair. Brundibar, the very word means little bee, and Brundibar, the main character, was a euphemism for Hitler. But why was this allowed? Because it was a spoof on Hitler, and in the end, the children sing a victory song. We've won a victory. The tyrant is dead. But why? Because it was a little children's piece, they thought. And they never bothered to translate the Czech into German. So for them, it was just a silly little thing. For everybody, adults included, in Theresienstadt, they knew the songs, and it was their secret. It was their secret protest against the Nazis. It was different with Victor Ullmann's Kaiser von Atlantis, which was written in German, composed in German, and they took it all the way to dress performances. And the Gestapo came to the final dress performance and closed it down, and sent Ullmann, the composer, on October 16th, 1944, to Auschwitz, and on October 18th he was dead, because that too was a spoof on Hitler. And he even used in the orchestration a distorted version of the German national anthem. And, of course, the Gestapo understood what it was about.
You have an association with Brundibar also. Didn't you produce something?
Yes, I love the piece. It's the only children's opera that I know of that is to be performed by children, basically for children, but adults enjoy it certainly, that is really successful. No one else has created this. It's simple for the children to sing, but the orchestration is brilliant and makes it sound much more difficult and sophisticated than it is. I produced a very professional performance in New York City. Actually, Eli Wallach made the introduction, so it was very lovely, and we had many performances, sold out houses.
Wonderful to hear that. Let's go back to Alice. She performed 100 concerts, as you say.
At least.
At least 100 concerts. Is this what kept her alive, these performances and the fact that they would use her over and over again?
No. I don't think so. Alive internally, patience and imagination. But not in terms of the Nazis, because the selection, I mean, it was a very cruel organization. The selection for the transports to Auschwitz or Bergen-Belsen or other killing fields was made by the Jewish Council, overseen by the Nazis, of course. But they had a council, and, you know, they would come to the group and they say, all right, we need 2,000 names. And that is not people, it was mainly just luck. Although, towards the end, Alice believes that one Nazi, a young soldier, may have helped her because someone stopped her and said he'd been listening outside the window. Fraternization was strictly forbidden, so Nazis didn't go to the concerts, but they could listen outside the window. And he told her he'd loved her Beethoven and wanted to talk more to her, but she kept walking. And finally he said, I have something important to tell you. You and your son will not be on a deportation list. In the beginning, in early 1942, when they first started sending people there, four symphony orchestras could have played at the same time. There were so many Czech musicians. But very quickly, they began to thin this out. And in the end, by liberation, Alice and another pianist were about the only professional musicians still playing concerts or still alive in Theresienstadt.
And one of the remarkable aspects of that was the fact that she played all of these wonderful compositions from memory.
Yes. Well, it was forbidden to take music or scores into the camp, so it was either memory or not at all. In fact, her friend, Edith Steiner Krauss, told Alice one day, we have to help another pianist. A young girl has come in. She may not be very good, but she wants to play, and I think we should help her. But she has no music, and she wants to play Bach's Italian Concerto. And Alice said, well, let's write it out for her. And by memory, these two women wrote out the entire score.
Could you do that?
Slowly. I think because it's a piece that I've played for years, so I think I probably know it well enough that I could write it out, but it would take me forever. I don't know how they managed.
It's just that part of the story is remarkable, but the story did not end with the liberation of Theresienstadt. Her story obviously continued and continued to this day, but she left Europe and went to Palestine.
She didn't get there until it was Israel. It was 1 year old when she went. After Alice came back to Prague, there was really no there. Other people had occupied her apartment. The government wouldn't get them out, even though she owned the apartment. The Nazis had taken her bank account, and she had no citizenship. The Czechs have not restored her citizenship to this day.
And the Czech governments have been quite liberal. I understand the communist period, but
right.
The Czechs were noted for being fairly liberal.
Yes, they were. But once the war was over and the Soviets had liberated, the communists were taking over. And they supported what they called revolutionary guards that ran wild in Prague. And they were taking out Czech revenge fomented by the Russians on anyone with a German name. Now, many people, most of the Jews were German, of German descent. So they even killed people who were returning from the camps. They could shoot anyone. They were not prosecuted. Holding a German book, hearing a German word come out of your mouth was enough to get you shot. Alice almost remarried during that period. She found someone, a journalist, a very brave man, who protested the communists the way they were behaving. And he ended up in their own gulag. She was unable to visit him. Things were getting tighter and tighter about getting out of the country. And she had to make that decision, stay and see what would happen with him or leave. And at the last second, she got her papers together and got herself to Israel, where she didn't speak a word of the language and learned Hebrew fluently at age 45.
I don't know if you're familiar with Madeleine Albright's book or her autobiography, which mm-hmm. details the period that you're talking mm-hmm. about. It was not a pretty time in Czechoslovakia.
It was horrible, horrible.
What did she do in Israel? Was she devoted still to music and performing it?
Yes. She found work at the what became the Reuben Academy, where she taught full time. And she continued to play concerts publicly and privately. She kept playing house concerts, recreating a little bit of her life in Prague at home in Jerusalem.
And how long did she stay there?
She said it was 37 of the happiest years of her life. She loved being part of a new country. Alice is not a complainer. She lived with an Arab family that didn't even have their own bathroom. But the country was vibrant. They were building, and she loved it. Still does love Israel.
But she's in London now, right?
She moved to London to be with her son. And as I said, she pulled up stakes. She didn't want to leave Israel. She moved, and he died.
in writing this book and collecting your thoughts and, to a certain degree, her thoughts, what is your takeaway from it all? I mean, what did you leave this project with?
Reverence for life, which is her greatest lesson. It's all we have. It's a great gift, and we must use each day to find joy and goodness, regardless of what happens.
And she's still active, and she's still spreading that kind of message to the people she's associated with.
People go to visit her just to feel her joy. She's constantly laughing, a little like the Dalai Lama.
Really? Well, Carol Ann, I have not yet read the book. I am going to read it. I look forward to reading it, and I've so enjoyed the opportunity to chat with you about it.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be here. You know, I am from Missouri.
Oh, you are? I didn't know that. What part of Missouri?
I grew up in Thayer, Missouri, which is right on the Arkansas border, about 75 miles north of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and about 130 miles south of Springfield.
Well, what got you out of Missouri?
Music. It was my escape route.
And you went from Thayerville to where?
I went from Thayer to New York City, where I went to Barnard and to Juilliard.
Well, I'm so glad that you made a fine career in music and also a literary career here. We're looking forward to the book.
Thank you so much.
Again, the name of the book is A Century of Wisdom, Lessons from the Life of Alice Herz Sommer. I asked Caroline if Alice had ever returned to her childhood home. Her response, no, because there was nothing left of her childhood there. As she put it, there was no there there. The Jewish Book Festival runs through the 15th. We have a link to its website on ours at stlpublicradio.org for information on visiting authors. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about an exhibit and conference at St. Louis University's Museum of Contemporary Religious Art, highlighting the work of Patrick Graham, about a film documenting the history of Cairo, Illinois. And in the next of our soundbite series with Sauce Magazine, a look at bread and how to bake it. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Mark Bowden about his book on the killing of Osama bin Laden. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Ariana Tobin, and Greg Muntinew. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.